This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our wee garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning, and guess what? I'm in Toronto. I'm here in the studio. How many weeks has it been? I've been, you know, broadcasting from home, and last week was a particularly interesting program for those who listened in. It was a one-hour monologue by me. can it get less interesting than that? I'm not sure. So to make sure that wasn't going to happen again, I've brought in my very fun friend, Lori DeMonte. Welcome.
Hey, Charlie. How are you today?
I'm excellent. Lori is, believe it or not, we went to high school together. So we go back quite a few years. Well, I'm not, who's counting, right? But Lori runs a company called Who Does Your Garden? So again, Who Does Your Garden? What a great name for a company, Lori.
Yeah, well, we find it works well.
Yes, I bet. So people go, oh my gosh, who does your garden?
Well, what are you doing here? Who's doing your garden?
Yeah, exactly. And you do beautiful gardens. So you maintain, well, we'll get more into what you do, but just in a nutshell, maintenance and design and install of beautiful plants.
That's right. It's all plant focused.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah. What we do for the garden is largely dependent on what the plant wants us to do.
Ah, yeah. So you listen to the plants.
We do.
Hey, that is so cool. Yeah. You know what? I mentioned to you, I'm in the process of a production called Healing Gardens, which is a 10-episode documentary series. I was talking to a professor from University of Guelph in the Royal Botanical Gardens this past week. And he is a microbiologist. He's a plant scientist. He's been doing this for a very long time. And like he said, you know, plants can't get away. They don't have legs to run away when they're under threat. Said, so it's pretty interesting the defense mechanisms that plants will come up with. And what's even more interesting, the communication between the plants.
Oh, the community is amazing. And we can't disregard that at all.
Yeah, just because we don't speak plant doesn't mean plants don't speak, was his point. So it was very interesting. Like so your point is the same one that, you know, listen to what the plant is telling you if you can, as best you can, and place them and orient them, et cetera, as
and so that they can be good friends and support each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, good point. Yeah. So listen, we're hoping to get some calls. Would you like to give out the numbers? I like to put people to work when they're joining me.
Okay, so for Toronto callers, you can call 416-360-0740. And then an out-of-town toll-free number is 1-866-740-4740.
Nice. Well done. Well done. So just a couple of announcements before we go any further. I did get a few emails. One was from the Blenheim Hort Society. They are hosting an in-person Hort Society meeting on Monday, September 20th. So I imagine that's, I'm confused where we are. Oh, it's this Monday. This Monday, 7 p.m. at the John League Building in Blenheim. Bill Ross will be the speaker. He is a nurseryman who will be speaking about giving you tips and tricks and ideas on fall preparations for your garden. So that's a, you know, obviously a good primer for all of us. Yeah. Today's the last Saturday of summer.
And the sky is telling us, the beautiful blue sky of fall is telling us it is here.
It is. And it's a really beautiful, it's a beautiful weekend.
It's been gorgeous all week.
Yeah. I mean, a bit hot for me, but still.
Sun's at a different angle. Got to adjust those sunglasses.
Yeah. Fall's coming, winter's coming. So it is time to start thinking about some of those preps. And we'll be grilling you a little bit, I think, about what you're doing in your company for your clients. One other announcement is from, let's see, where are we, guys? Oshawa, the Oshawa Garden Club. Let me know that they are having a plant sale and it is today. So that is from 8 to 11 a.m. If you're interested in good deals on interesting plants from members of the Oshawa Garden Club, the location is 711 Mary Street North in Oshawa. So between 8 and 11 today. So you've got
those are always great great sales because you can find little gems that have been really cared for.
I know, loved plants. But you can also find some very vigorous or what we might call invasive plants at those plant sales because people have so many of them, they're happy to share.
Yeah, and you can look in your neighborhood and see how closely knit the neighbors are because how many of the same plants are on the same street.
That reminds me. I remember going on a garden tour on Center Island years ago as part of the Toronto Botanical Gardens tour. And it was amazing. It was about four plants and they were everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it was because everything goes by fairy, right? Yeah. So somebody brought, four people brought plants and then they shared them with everybody. But it was just how they were put together differently, which was interesting.
Yeah, that's what
it was. But it was really, really obvious. Yeah, yeah. Limited palette.
And you've got to keep take care of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Everyone will know.
Yeah, and you're right about the how they're knitted together, like how different individuals have found their own creative streak and their own making it happy for them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So listen, we will just take a short break. Important messages from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Joseph is on the line from Mississauga, so that's great. Happy to talk to Joseph in a few minutes. Feel free to call 416-360-0740. You should have this in your speed dial by now, 1-866-740-4740. Lori and I are hanging here. Happy to chat. Back in a sec.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And here we are. I've got a special guest in the studio, Lori DeMonte.
Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. It's pretty funny. We went to high school together. We were these cute little teenagers at Loretto Abbey in our short little mini pleated skirts. And now here we are with our silver hair, glasses. How things change. We are streaming live on the web for anybody who would like to watch and listen. Of course, it's go to AM740 or zoomermedia.ca and then listen live. It's that simple. You can just see it. See the silver-haired old buddies here in studio. But we are here to chat gardening, and we're looking forward to your questions, your tips, your techniques. I can see we've got Joseph waiting on the line. Lori, are you ready to chat with Joseph?
Let's
all right. Good morning, Joseph.
Morning.
Morning. What's going on?
I had a plant, I think they call it air plants.
Air plants?
Yeah, it doesn't need any soil.
Yes. Also known as Tillandsia. T-I-L-L-A-N-D-S-I-A. Tillandsia.
Okay. Now, is there any way that I can get some new roots?
Well, you're right. They don't really have roots. They're not found in the soil. They're not what we call terrestrial plants. They have kind of vestigial roots, but I mean, my favorite air plants, they have a magnet glued onto the plant and you use it as a fridge magnet. Like they're really just not in a pot. But it's important that they're in high humidity because they do all their moisture absorption through their leaves.
Interesting.
So you got to run them under the kitchen tap every 3, 4, 5 days. And so the water gets down in between the leaves and then you just let them drip dry and then put them back wherever they were. But yeah, don't try and grow them in soil. They will rot. They naturally evolved living up in trees in tropical rainforests. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joseph. Don't be a stranger.
Yeah, I wish I could live in a tropical rainforest.
Really? Up in a tree?
Without any roots.
Well, you know, it's unusual. We say, plants can't go anywhere because, they're rooted. Yeah. But then there are examples that aren't so rooted.
And so moss would be the moss that you see hanging from trees?
Yeah, this those dripping Spanish mosses and sphagnum mosses. Well, not sphagnum, but Spanish mosses. Absolutely.
Curtains of it.
Yeah, it's all about environment, right? Mm. So have you ever been down to Georgia or South Carolina in the spring?
Boiling.
When the azaleas are blooming and the moss is everywhere and it's like, oh my, it's like you're on a movie set, but it's real. All those old plantation houses.
Yeah.
But that's, again, different, milder climate than ours, but that high humidity makes such a difference.
Yeah, and that's something about so many times people want to have moss in between their interlock stepping stones and stuff like that. And I've always found if moss grows there naturally, go for it. Don't take it away. Mm-hmm. If you want to enforce it and put it in.
Hard to do.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10.
It fights back. Well, and you're right. And I've been in that situation too. So that people don't want the moss. And I'm like, oh, hold on. I'm going to take That's it right. home with me. While I dig it out, I'm putting it in my pocket because I love the moss.
Come on over. And then
I take it home and I put it in the blender with the yogurt.
Right.
And zing it all around. And then I have this like concrete duck, painted the duck all up with yogurt covered, you know, spores of mosses.
And?
Can't say it's really ever grown there. It just kind of looks like it needs to be washed.
Yeah. It's the experience of it all, though.
Exactly. It's a good idea. But again, you know, that duck or whatever it is you're trying to make the moss grow on has to be in, you know, a bit of sun, bit of shade, high moisture, you know, la la la, not too much wind. Yeah, it's all pretty.
And they're not very steppable in that fragile environment.
Not until they're
in their real environment where they really take steppable.
So when I was in British Columbia earlier this summer as part of the Healing Gardens crew and doing an episode, I was in moss that you wouldn't believe. Like you look at it, you say, I'm taking my shoes off and I might even just take my clothes off because this is just roll in this moss, spongy, right? Like it's like a waterbed. Like it's just one of those like spongy, soft, super green. And they had a drought. So they were really in a dry situation in Vancouver. I've never seen yellow lawns, but I did when I was there in July.
Was it crispy, the moss?
No, it wasn't. No, because it was in this special garden called the Natobi Memorial Garden on the campus of UBC. And it's just such a beautifully designed garden with big, you know, layers and layers of trees, right? And all pruned and placed perfectly so that no matter which way you looked, there was always an amazing view. Right. So a really well-designed Japanese garden. It was really, really the style and the feeling of that garden was just...
Yeah, well, the three elements, what is it? The water, the sky, and...
Earth, I think. Earth, yeah.
So respectful.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, there was, it's like I say, layers of trees so that, you know, you'd have a tall tree, a medium-sized tree, the lower tree, and then you'd have your ground cover beneath. So lots and lots of textures, all shades of green, basically, right?
Right. There was the proportions are perfect. That's what you have to think of constantly in your garden. You have to respect your house, the proportion of your house to the size of the plants and the layering and the canopies, all of that stuff. Layering is key.
That's right. And then recognize that if a plant is happy, it doesn't just stop growing. It keeps growing. And that can be a bit challenging because then there's the pruning. Yeah. And how many people prune with confidence or prune well? In your experience.
Or with, aggravation.
Yeah.
I'm going to take my aggravation out on this plant. And
that's right. I'm going to take my dull axe and go at it. It's like, no.
Rip, rip, rip.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, pruning is a whole other story.
And it's an art. It's an art. It's a science. Many people are afraid to prune. So that's how I think.
And that's actually a good key. If you're afraid, you're usually slower and more methodical, or you'll just leave it up to somebody, or your fear will get you motivated to start to understand and to learn.
Which would be good. You'll just close your eyes and go back and watch TV, and the plant becomes completely out of proportion with its surroundings.
Because the plant is not like a pillow you can fluff. I always say plants aren't furniture, pieces of furniture. They're not static. And that's what we have to stop thinking of plants as in the garden. They do change. They do evolve. Mm-hmm. Every day they're different.
Exactly. That's what I'm teaching my husband right now. he's having bad dreams about pulling weeds because we have a big property with a lot of weeds.
Right.
He's like, will this ever be done? I go, no, this no, it'll not. Never be done. Yeah. He's like, what? I go, honey, there's always going to be weeds. Like, just relax.
Yeah.
Just be in the moment.
Yeah.
Don't get frustrated.
And you have to have imagination. I put a garden in on King Street this year, and it was what I call a hostile environment because it's right on King Street. It's very noisy, high pollution in the air, extreme belting hot sun, lots of reflective heat. Had to take up a lawn and put down a garden, which of course now this means that the soil is just awful underneath. And went there yesterday and realized that I'm going to have to renovate this entire planting next year.
Because
all the plants are growing, taking it on at a different rate. So the proportions of everything are
wrong.
Odd.
Yeah.
And I didn't respect the line here or was over enthusiastic there.
Right. And the plants didn't read the catalogs, right? If they would just read their tags and grow to what they're supposed to grow to, life would be easier for us, right?
Yeah. Always learning.
All right, I don't want to cut you off, but we do have to go for one short break. Listen to our you know, very important sponsors, and we will be right back. I'm with Lori DeMonte from Who Does Your Garden, and I'm Charlie Dobbin. This is The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias. Dahlias, Forsythia and Foxgloves, Marigolds, Magnolia, Lavender and Lupins, Dahlias, Delphiniums, Stocks, Fox, Hollyhocks, Tulips and Sweet Williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
That's Charlie Dobbin and Lori DeMonte, my absolutely special guest.
Hey, Charlie.
Welcome again. Lori is a wealth of information, particularly when it comes to design principles, maintenance principles, beautiful gardens. She does have a what's your website?
Whodoesyourgarden.com.
Okay, so who, no question mark, just
no question mark.
Whodoesyourgarden.com. If you want to check out what Lori's all about. But in the meantime, I see we have Cheryl calling in from Wasaga Beach.
Cheryl, hi Cheryl.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi, good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Cheryl.
So, I have a serviceberry that I moved last fall. It came back, it's doing well, except it has that, it's all coated with mildew or something on the leaves. And I know that normally you would spray it with dormancy spray, but I'm wondering, should I be doing anything now with it besides making sure that I don't drop the leaves and I get them out of the area for the spring?
What did you say you were spraying it with? Dormant?
No, she was saying she should spray it with dormant spray, but not yet because it's not dormant, right?
Right.
But powdery mildew, you're seeing like the mildew on the leaves. What do you tell a client when they say, what am I going to do with all this mildew on the leaves of my serviceberry?
Well, in some ways, I kind of just accept it, but then I look at the
Sorry, I can't hear you. Can you speak up just a little bit?
In some ways, I respect it. One sec, I'll see if my
No, that's not your mic. That's your headphones. Just a little closer to the mic.
Sorry there, first time here. With powdery mildew, it's indicative often of poor air circulation. And it's really hard to understand in a garden that you have poor air circulation when you're outside. But even something as simple as a fence that's completely closed in, or there's a whole bunch of plants around it, or even if there's just too much watering in the garden going on.
Sorry, I'm losing you again.
Lori is a soft-spoken person.
I'm going to hold the mic. Is that any better, Cheryl?
A little bit.
Just up the volume on the voice?
Yeah.
Better. Okay. Is that better?
Yep.
That's better.
Okay. Should I repeat the whole thing then from the top?
Sure. That would be great.
Okay. Anytime I see powdery mildew in the garden, I often think of the surroundings. So it's oftentimes promoted because there's a lack of air circulation. Plus, there's a lot of plants that are just prone to powdery mildew. Lilacs are, turtle plants are, and so is the serviceberry, yeah, which is actually in the rose family. Mm-hmm. So it does like a lot of sun, and it likes it pretty much all day to perform best. So
6 hours or more of sun is optimal.
Yeah.
Good air circulation, like you're saying. Pruning for its
openness.
So you got air and sun penetrating into the plant. But Cheryl made a good point, which is she's being careful with her good garden hygiene. She's
That's
cleaning
right.
up. That's excellent. Very good thing to do. That limits the spread of that powdery mildew for next spring.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason I actually moved it was because where it was a very bad spot. It wasn't supposed to be there. It was supposed to be a chokecherry or chokeberry bush. Uh-huh. And they gave us the wrong thing. We planted it, and 2 years later, I went, this is a serviceberry.
They're both beautiful plants, though.
Yeah, so I moved it, but I didn't get the dormancy spray on in the spring, and I just thought, it's not 100% covered, but there's a lot of it. I'm surprised it's done so well.
Yeah. Does it flower for you?
No, this one didn't flower this year, but it's only, honestly, I cut it back drastically when I moved it.
Yeah, that's where your flower buds
went. Maybe about 3 feet, 3.5 feet tall yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. But that's great. I mean, you did your transplanting last fall, which is optimal.
Yeah.
Very good time to transplant. If in the process you pruned it back, that's where your flower buds went, right? Mm-hmm. They were all on those tips and the new growth. I've actually had serviceberry blooming at my place in the last couple of weeks because it's been such a funny summer between the extreme drought and heat and on and on and on. So I've got magnolia has popped some buds on me. The serviceberry or amelanchier has also popped some buds completely out of season. Yeah. What are you going to do? do, right? It's all, yeah. It's in response to the environment,
yep.
Things yeah. we can't control. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't worry too much about it, Charlotte. Every year's a new year. Doing the things that Lori has suggested will certainly discourage powdery mildew in the future, but we can't control the humidity and the rainfall, et cetera.
Yeah.
Dormant spray is a good preventative spray. It may help you, but make sure the plant is dormant if you're, follow the instructions on the package.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks so much for calling. Love to hear from, new voices. I'm sorry your microphone isn't standing up very well.
Yeah, it's a little top heavy.
You want to stand it on this Kleenex box or something? Like, that might help. I'll throw this one. Hold on. Well, wait for a second. You never know what you can come up with here. All right. So thank you, Barb. Remember, we're only halfway through the show. We've got time for calls, and we're absolutely interested in listening to your questions, your tips, your techniques. Phone number here, local, 416-360-0740. Or if you're calling from places like Wasaga Beach, 1-866-740-4740. And Vicky, wait a minute, hold on, am I right? No, Barb, we're going to speak to Barb. She's calling from, I think it's, is it Ayton or Aiden where you're calling from? Good morning, Barb.
Good morning, Charlie. I was just wondering, is it better to trim a cedar and privet hedge in the spring or the fall?
Are you just giving them a light shearing, or are you going to do like a real rejuvenation kind of?
Just a light trim.
When would you do that, Lori?
Well, I often look at the interior of both the privet and the cedar, particularly the privet, because oftentimes hedges are cut with electronic devices and all you're attending to is the tips, the new growth. I really like to look and to see what deadwood is down in there at the base and get rid of that first. That's always my primary target.
And that opens it up. Like the deciduous privet, that opens it up, going back to that air circulation and sun penetration.
And it's kind of unsightly, and it also leaves a lot of space for invaders, because if you don't tend to the interior of the plant, you'll get a nice maple sapling that will grow into a maple tree. And
Manitoba
elms,
maple in Toronto.
Just tons. This was no longer a privet hedge, but it's a cornucopia of a privet hedge. So that's one thing I just like to look at first. And then I think anytime you want to just clip it back. But I'm often much more a hands-on pruner with just hand tools, not shearing. And I find you have to do a lot less pruning. And you, like really, once, not even once a year sometimes, if you've got it all under control.
Well, and there's really formal pruning, and then there's more informal pruning when it comes to hedges as well. So sometimes some of that shearing is connected to that super linear look.
I still don't do it. I just do it all just by hand. And it still has its formal look, but it's always nice, fresh, juvenile leaves that are always luscious looking and softer.
And I personally would not trim a cedar in the fall, because whatever trimming you do on a cedar in the fall is going to leave blunt cut ends behind, which are going to be there all winter and look quite unsightly.
But that's another reason I don't use anything except hand, because then you avoid all that blunt.
Right, because you, with your hand pruners, you go back to a little bit of green. But if it is a pretty old cedar hedge and it's got a lot of nothing in the center and only a little bit of green on the outside, it can be a little challenging. Cedars, you really have to stay on top of them. But you can shear or prune back. I agree with you. I don't use electric shears. I do the Edward Scissorhands, the long blades. When it comes to hedges, large evergreen trimming, but I typically do that when they're actively growing, because I find that whatever pruning I do, the plant responds by growing back very vigorously at that point, and any holes that have been caused by my removal of branches fills in very quickly, and that will not happen if you do that now.
Yeah, and don't forget, it's always nice to give them a little bit of food and check your compost.
Always add
all
organic material to the soil.
Yeah,
and spring or fall would you do that?
Well,
or both?
It's hard for me to answer that question because I'm in maintenance. Sometimes I just have to do it when I'm there. But that's why I do it with such care and precision by hand, because I look at the nodes and where the flushing is going to happen. If I cut this, what's supporting it underneath? So I might not cut it if nothing's there to support it. And then next year, because pruning isn't just a one-time thing, it's a lifetime thing.
It's true. And different plants properly are pruned at different times of year, though that isn't always possible when it's a maintenance company or might not be there every week. But it's hard to just prune every plant on a day in May.
Yeah.
Which sometimes people do, and then they go, I don't understand why, you know.
Yeah, just do it with some thought. And if you're taking a whole bunch off, really do pay attention to the timing. If you're just selectively clipping, then you're probably okay any time of year, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, and with privet and things like that, you can cut them down to 6 inches tall.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a neighbor do that a long, long time ago and going, wow, that just looked really weird. You know, a big old privet hedge taken down to 6 inches tall in the fall.
Yeah.
But it was a great opportunity to get out all that deadwood, right? Expose the crown of the plants.
Yeah.
It was pretty god-awful looking all winter. But tell you what, it was gorgeous in the spring and just grew back. And, you know, again, shearing at that point to keep it tidy.
Yeah, but then you might never have to take it down again if you just keep focusing on the interior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which again, most people don't, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see who we got on the line right
now. Is that the same for a silver lace vine?
Oh.
A vine is different from a hedge. There's a fast growing plant, a silver lace vine.
Yeah. What's your question specifically about that?
Barb, did you have something specific about this?
Yeah, I was just wondering when you cut that back in the fall or the spring.
Is that a new or an old wood bloomer?
It's
probably a new.
I personally would cut it back in the spring.
I would too.
It depends again how far you want to go. If you want to be brutal, you know, do a real serious cutting back, do it in the spring. The plant will survive. It will come back gangbusters. If you wait till July and say, oh, this plant is so overgrown, get out and start doing a big radical cutback in July, you'll kill it. So, you know, it, depending on the, you know, it's hot, et cetera, stressful for the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So always remember when plants are vigorously growing, which is spring, you can't really go wrong. Pruning then will give you fresh growth. Okay. So thanks for that, Barb. And let us know. I'd like to hear back how that goes.
Yeah.
And I know Lori will be listening as well to hear how that goes. In the meantime, look, we've got a Toronto caller, but we've got Vicky on the line. Good morning, Vicky.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding a chocolate vine. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I bought it this year, and it's growing like the Dickens, but I have no idea when it should bloom, if it will bloom this year, like planted it in the spring. And it's just growing and growing, and I don't see anything.
That's the five-leaf acacia. Is that what we're talking about? My favorite vine.
Is that right?
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So five-leaf. Oh, so A-K-E-B as in Bob, I-A. Akebia is the proper name of chocolate vine. We call it chocolate vine because when it blooms, they're little tiny brown flowers that smell.
With wings.
With purple wings. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like pretty cool looking. That smell like not so much. To me, they smell more like vanilla. But some people, I think they smell. It smells like chocolate.
I always got chocolate vine and Dutchman's pipe mixed up. I always used to think they were calling Dutchman's pipe chocolate vine, but Dutchman's pipe smells like tobacco. That's why it's called.
Well, and the flowers look like a pipe.
Oh, the flowers look like a pipe. Okay, got that all mixed up. The non-botanical name sometimes can be confusing. Anyway, so what you're asking about...
When? And will it bloom this year? No, because it blooms in the summer.
It's spring.
Spring, like June-ish.
A little earlier than that, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I've got it all on my back porch. I've got some gorgeous pictures of it in bloom. And you don't really see it. They're called insignificant flowers, but they do hang down a little bit from the leaves. So you've got about a week and a half to two to see them bloom.
Mm-hmm. Sun, shade, where did you plant it?
I plant them everywhere.
Yeah.
They're not self-supporting, so you've got to make sure that you artfully train it where you want to go. And it's very easy to train. Sometimes all you have to do is put a little nail in your wood fence if you've got a wood and a little tiny piece of wire.
Twine right on.
Yeah, I've got a. You can really do amazing things with it. I've got lights all through mine as well.
Oh,
it looks
nice.
Gorgeous.
Huh.
I don't know. I think you just prune it for the way you want it to grow.
Mm-hmm. And will it bloom this year? Obviously not. But if you do no pruning now, which is what I would suggest because it's so newly planted. You know, the first year or so, I pretty much let plants settle in. I let them show me what they want to do. And then after maybe the second or third season, now I start becoming the boss and saying, okay, hold on. You know, I don't want you growing that way. I want this way.
You are not allowed to smother this Japanese maple.
That's right. Exactly. You're not allowed to cover my windows or whatever. So Vicky, what I would probably do is leave it alone this winter. look for flowers, and they are insignificant, so mm-hmm. you're going to have to look for them, but you may smell them before you see them mm-hmm. next spring. And then at that point, really think about where you want it to go. Start that directing, whether mm-hmm. it's with fishing line or little mm-hmm. nails or, you know, a trellis, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's got something to grow on that's going to add, you know, privacy to your garden and beauty to your garden, whatever it is you're looking for. Okay, sound good?
On of my house and facing east.
Yeah.
But I was thinking it would probably do better in the back where I have a fence that I could climb all over.
What type of fence is it?
It's the wire fence.
Oh, that's perfect.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So when would it be the best time to move it then?
Now?
Yeah, now is good.
I could do it now. Yeah. So would I trim it then when I move it? I would trim it.
You, if it looks untidy or unsightly or anything is broken, but.
Well, remember, when we do transplant, we always leave some roots behind. So the theory is that if we're going to do some root pruning when we move plants, to prune the upper part of the plant balances off the roots we've left behind. So mm-hmm. it's not a huge prune. And like Lori said, if stuff gets broken in the process of moving it, then yeah, it makes sense to do some cutting back. But yeah, and with a vine, likely you will have to do some cutting back. It's just
yeah, because when I have it there now, like I had a low trellis. But then I put a few strings on it, and it went right up on my railing. So now it's all around my railing in the front.
Mm-hmm. Sounds happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so I would cut that part off when I move it and just bring it to the back.
Well, if you have the patience to disentangle it, I would suggest disentangling it and taking as a big amount of the root ball at once as you can.
Mm, of course, always.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And put it in a bucket with water.
Oh.
Okay, when you're taking it out of the ground.
Right.
Keep it in the water until your hole is ready to receive the new plant.
Well, not for a couple of days.
No. Well,
a few minutes. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah, just a short time. Yeah.
Make sure your hole is nice and happy, and your root ball goes in.
And you said that the flowers are hard to see. The picture that it shows there, they're kind of a purple lilac flower.
That's right. Mm-hmm. There's tiny little wings, like smaller even than your baby fingernail.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I see.
Yeah, but
okay.
They're absolutely stunningly beautiful when you do see them.
And there's lots of those little flowers.
Tons of them.
Yeah, they grow. There's masses in clumps all along the stems.
Oh, excellent. That's what I was hoping for. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So hopefully next year it will surprise me.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll let you know if it's doing well.
It will. And mm-hmm. and again, the transplanting and cutting back you're going to do this year, this fall, it will have some impact on next year. So patience. Gardening is all about patience. And
and
transplanting is all about roots first. Mm-hmm. So next year won't be its best year, but the year after, it'll start doing its best years from mm-hmm. that point forward, I would say, based on moving it. And now is a great time to transplant. Soil is
excellent.
Nice and warm. Plants are so happy to be popped out and popped back in. They just don't even notice it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly and you do it right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. All right. Let's see. Okay. We do have to do one more break. Actually, there's one more after this too, but we're mm-hmm. not going anywhere. So don't you go anywhere. And I can see we've got Monica waiting to speak with us, calling from Oakville. So back right after this to see what's going on in Monica's garden.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yep, it's Charlie Dobbin with a special guest, Lori DeMonte of Who Does Your Garden, Darling? It's gorgeous. that's not really the name of the company. The company is Who Does Your Garden.
But you're gorgeous, darling.
Thank you, darling. There we are. Okay, we have waiting on the line, Monica, giving us a call from Oakville. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning, Charlie.
How are you doing?
Doing well, and you?
Excellent.
I could really use some advice for my little maple tree.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tree that I rescued from a dark corner. It had gotten very thin and spindly, but anyway, now it's planted in full sun. We've even taken the stakes off it, so it's very happy where it's located.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so happy that it's growing these very, very long branches from the crown, 3-4 feet long. There must be at least half a dozen, if not more, of them. And I'm just wondering how I prune that properly.
So how tall is the maple right now from ground?
Well, it's probably, including these shoots coming off the top, it's probably now about 20 feet tall.
Oh, my. So, and it is a single stem trunk.
Yes.
And at what point do the branches start along the trunk?
Well, that's the thing. There isn't one single crown shooting up the middle. It just sort of spreads from the trunk. The trunk is only about the size of my forearm, but it's very sturdy. Mm-hmm. And I would say, like, I don't know, 6 feet, 8 feet up is where the branches start sprouting in all directions.
Right. So you can walk beneath it. Right. And you, this maple, was this something that a squirrel planted for you, or was it a plant that you actually planted yourself at
some
point?
No, a squirrel planted it for me.
Okay, so you don't know what kind of maple it is.
I have lots of those.
I bet. Oakville, you're the land of squirrels, I think.
Yes, it is.
Any idea what kind of maple it might be?
Well, I think probably just your run-of-the-mill. It doesn't turn fantastically red in the fall or anything, but actually the leaves start out red in the spring and then they just turn green. And this year they have no black dots on them, for which I'm grateful.
That's good to know. Yeah, that's the tar spot.
Yeah, that was last year, but not this year.
I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't get a great fall color. It could be a Norway maple. They are very prolific with their seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And all right. I'll tell you what I think, and then Lori will tell you what she thinks. No? Do you want to say that?
No, I want you to tell me first.
Well, so the thing with trees, deciduous trees like maples, you always want to have a single terminal leader on the plant.
Yeah, I know. I Googled that, and I saw that, but I don't have one of those.
You have to make one. So you're going to have to get up on a ladder, or somebody's going to have to. It's actually better done with two people, because you've got one person on the ground saying, get that one. No, not that one, this one.
Yep.
And because you're up close when you're on the ladder with your pruners in your hand, whereas down on the ground you get a bit of a better perspective.
Sure.
But once you're up there and you can see closely, there will be one branch that is facing up to the sky that is going to be straighter, perhaps thicker, stronger than the others. So right away, and sometimes, grab a little piece of ribbon or something and just go, we're not taking that one off. That's the leader. Then you stand back looking at all those other branches and you selectively prune out. And this is where you got to really use your imagination, because ultimately you want this tree to have a straight trunk and branches that are spaced on all 360 degrees of the trunk, and you want them to be growing where you can still mow the lawn beneath, right? So you want them high enough.
Sure.
But you also, it's the angle that they're growing at that makes a difference, whether they're a weak limb or a strong limb, based on the angle that it's coming off the main trunk. So I'm not saying you can do this all at once and, spend half an hour and it's done, but that's how it starts. It starts with really studying that plant and studying its skeleton, its framework, and then working with what you've got there, recognizing you are going to have to take a bunch off. Do not take tips off. Leave those long, because as soon as you take tips off, you're going to end up with even more bushiness. And you don't want bushiness. You want a tree.
Yeah. My goodness. So leave these long spindly things on over the winter?
Not all of them. You're going to take some of them off.
Yeah.
Lori, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think what you said is right, because you're looking for the term is called apical dominance, mm-hmm. and that one leader branch will do that for mm-hmm. you. And then just decide that is this gift that the squirrel has given you the best tree for your property? But I guess at 20 feet now, you're committed to it.
Well, and the other thing is that I know they might seem very soft and spindly and blowing in the wind, but once the winter comes and the winter winds come and all that stuff, those branches will be much thicker and more solid next spring. It's the blowing in the wind that really does make trees strong, whether it's the main trunk or the branches. Mm-hmm. Worst case, we get a real serious blow and some breakage happens. But let's assume that doesn't happen, because right now they're very flexible. We've had warm weather, we've had sufficient rain, and you get a lot of soft, flexible growth when that happens. And that's probably what you're looking at. So just avoid any tip cutting. Instead, look at full branch removal. Keep finding that terminal branch to leave in position from now until eternity. Okay. Thanks, Monica. Good luck with that. You can always take pictures. And you know what? Ultimately, if arborists can be a godsend, ISA, International Society of Arboriculture.ca, you can find a certified arborist in your neighborhood who will come to your property, tell you what they will do for you, not charge you anything at that point until you hire them to do what they're recommending. So whether it's pruning, deep root feeding, you know, whatever, tree removal, a certified arborist is the way to go, I believe, because too many men with a chainsaw have had their way and done all kinds of damage to too many trees in my world anyway. Look, 9:50, last time, we're going to say back in a minute. And when we are back in a minute, I'm going to ask Lori to tell us a little bit more about what she does and some of the, you know, things that are sort of fun and keep her going in this wacky horticultural business right after this. Okay.
This is Zoomer Radio Toronto. CFZM FM and CFZM AM, owned and operated by MZ Media Incorporated.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, here we are. I did leave you with the thought that I was going to put Lori DeMonte on the spot and have her share just a little bit about her company called Who Does Your Garden? What do you do? What's the most fun part of what you do? And yeah, what's your real driving force? Because horticulture is a labor of love. You got to admit that.
Yeah, you got to be sort of bent and crazy to
bent
do
crazy,
it over
I
the
like
la-
it.
Yeah, 15, 20 years that I've been doing this. Always wanted to do gardening, though. It's a strong draw towards plants. And what I try to do is just provide resilient gardens, keep them stunning, keep them thriving. Do anything from renovation, design, new design, keeping the old design happy, lots and lots of pruning, tons and tons of pruning, container design,
right?
Not so much vegetable,
right?
I can do a little bit of vegetable work, but that should really be the homeowner's purview.
No lawns, obviously.
No lawns, nothing electric, no tools.
Right. Do you ride your bike to your clients' places?
Of course not. When I'm doing consults, why I rode my bike here.
I know. That's why I asked.
Yeah, just try to coach people on and keep their enthusiasm going. Get them confident in their garden. Create patience, because a new garden may take 4 or 5 years, but once that five-year mark is hit, you'll really appreciate how layered, like we were talking before, about how layered the canopy can be. Accept failure. You know,
yeah, and don't blame yourself, right? None of this black thumb stuff. I mean, some plants die. Some plants are just bum plants. Yeah. It's not your fault. Yeah. I mean,
teenagers
might be, but
go through their growing phases and juveniles. Yeah. A lot of work with soil, because soil is the fundamental thing that will keep your garden happy and thriving and going. So lots and lots of work on soil. Mm-hmm. Paying attention to mulch, when to use it, how to use it, how not to use it. Compost, sand, all sorts of stuff. Because there's many, it's the web of life, the soil. Right. So you want to keep the web of life supporting your
growth. Pretty holistic in your way of looking at these garden spaces. It's right from the ground up to the sky and everything in between.
Yeah, I try to use ecological practices, principles all the time in the maintenance practices.
So and you're mostly urban based. Most of your clients are in the GTA or really downtown Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have a few cottages. And, you know, some of the clients, we end up doing their cottage at Simcoe and where you are, out in Trenton and Wellington and up in Thornbury, places like that.
Nice,
so that's getting nice too.
No kidding.
Don't know the deer too well, though, so I have to get a education on that.
I have deer in my back 40. But we'll talk about that later. I sprayed last fall with a very specific product called Plant Skid. I had no deer damage. So does that mean the Plant Skid protected, or the deer weren't interested in my plants anyway?
Right.
I'm not sure. Right. But I'll be spraying again on principle this fall. Listen, we have like a couple of minutes here. Let's just see if Anne in Newmarket wants to ask us something that we want to answer, right? Bottom line. Morning. Morning, Anne. What's going on at your place?
Hi. How are you?
Excellent.
Good to hear from you. I plant an, is it too early to plant tulip bulbs?
I'd wait a little bit longer. The soil is still a little bit too warm, and the nights aren't quite cool enough.
If Newmarket. You have tulips now, obviously. You bought them?
Yes. And I did plant some.
Yeah, and, but you know what else, Lori, and you probably know this as well. If Anne doesn't plant them now, she's going to forget about them, well, and then she'll be calling me in January going, you told me, oh, I forgot about them, and now they're still in my garage.
Yeah, I was going to preface that too. Are you going to be going away?
Yeah.
That's the thing I was saying earlier about pruning. Sometimes I'm, because I'm in the gardening business and provide services for clients, sometimes it's not the best time to prune, theoretically. Mm-hmm. But
you do it anyway.
I kind of do it. Yeah. So you have to look at it holistically.
Yeah.
And but you said earlier, transplant, it's okay to do right now, so I'm doing some of that, too.
Good idea.
Good.
You know, if I had tulips in my hand and it was a beautiful weekend like this, I wouldn't hesitate to plant them. We know that the nice warm soil that actually they've done underground photography of what happens when you plant a tulip. It's like minutes before the roots start to grow on the bulbs when you plant them now. But just make sure it's a well-drained location. No sogginess. Going to be sunny in the spring. Plant them deep enough so the squirrels aren't digging them up. And you, and like my friend Sean James always says, you can't plant tulips too deep. So get them down deep enough the squirrels don't even know they're there. And I would go ahead, like, you know, it's got to work with your lifestyle too, right? But if you wait a couple of weeks, that's okay, too. Just don't wait into November. Then the soil has cooled off too much.
No, I usually try to get them in before that.
And daffodils actually do better the sooner you plant them. Is this true? They take a little bit longer to get their roots established?
And lilies have to be planted at the moment you're buying them. Lilies and fritillaria into the ground immediately. They'll do better.
Fritillaria can rot quite quickly.
Yeah, because they don't have the tunic. They don't have that little paper covering.
That's what it
is. That little paper covering keeps the tulips protected.
Do you have any suggestion how you can cover it up so the squirrels won't get at it?
Well, depth.
Depth makes a real difference. Look around. Make sure there's no squirrels watching you. If there are, get some peanuts, throw them across the road so they're not seeing what you're doing, and then get them in the ground really quick, and then put, I do, like, I just find some debris, like some leaves, some cut branches, and I throw them on top of the soil where I've just planted my tulips, so the squirrels don't know I've just done something there. It's when we leave a beautiful, clean, freshly leveled there. What's under there? And they start digging. Okay, we got to go. Thanks,
Anne.
Thanks for your call. Look, we have seconds to say goodbye. Thank you. Thank you, Lori, for coming in.
Oh, it's been a thrill, Charlie.
It's
thank you.
It's been great. I'm so glad you came. We'll have to do this again.
All right. Keep it growing.
All right. See you again.
Bye-bye.
Next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.